Hey, this is the Living Legacy Project Part 2 with Victor Shanchuk on February 27th, 2014. So Victor, when we were here last time, we talked a lot about your time at City Honors, as well as some of the different art projects you've been involved with. I know we talked about the artist gallery last time. I know you were interested in talking about your childhood growing up in New York. And
we'll probably cover some of the same things in a different way as opposed to last time. I don't know if many artists talk about themselves in growing up in a particular area or particular neighborhood, whether they have pride in that or fear because of the experiences they may have had. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, in Bedford-Stuyvesant. I always felt that I left Bed-Stuy as a survivor. And you might say, well, that's funny. Why a survivor? Well, it was a tough neighborhood to grow up in. It was multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-racial, and it was a neighborhood where you had to protect yourself or learn to protect yourself. We walked to school, elementary school, from K to 8. I had my first girlfriend in the 7th grade. Maria Gonzalez was her name. That was quite an experience, learning to relate to Puerto Rican people. And funny thing is, they were the minorities in the neighborhood. They were minorities moving into the neighborhood. And that is where a lot of the conflict took place between the regular people that lived in the neighborhood as opposed to these new so-called immigrants that were coming into Bed-Stuy. But we all got along. You just didn't go out at night. It was a learning experience. My landlord was black, or should I say my parents' landlord was black. My sister and brother and I grew up together in the apartment that we lived in. I went to high school in Manhattan. Thanks to my 8th grade art teacher and also guidance counselor, although the guidance counselors didn't exist at that time. That's ancient history. I put a portfolio together and applied to the School of Industrial Art, which is now the High School of Art and Design in New York City. Got in. There were also two other students from the same school, elementary school that I attended. Gary Slater and Dale Drummond were their names. We were all very successful in high school. The most unusual thing about the high school experience, it was like a mini college experience in that we were taught to think for ourselves, we were taught to develop different techniques, we were taught to see, we were told to go to museums, we were exposed to art all the time. Even though it was a basic commercial type art program as a high school, freshmen and sophomore students went to a school or a school building in downtown, what one considered downtown Manhattan, which was on 51st Street off of Lexington. And the funny thing is, right around the corner from the school is where the Marilyn Monroe train scene with the skirt blowing up in the air took place. I couldn't be there because it took place at, I think 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. But it was quite an experience for the school. We were taught basics in the lower school, and in the upper school where we had chosen our majors, and which I chose advertising art, it was uptown on 77th Street and 3rd Avenue, off of 3rd Avenue. We got some wonderful egg creams across the street from the school, too. That's where we had intense study in our choice of study, be it illustration, cartooning, fashion illustration, fashion design, industrial design, advertising design. I went into advertising art I worked a part-time job at Display Designers Incorporated, designing sugar packets and sugar cube labels. Our studio was right across the aisle was Irving Penn's studio, so we got to peek in occasionally to see what he was working on. I also worked at BBD&O, which was an advertising agency, and did an internship there in New York. Saw the first color TV program in their offices, which was quite an experience. But all of these experiences were developing me as an individual to explore and see and develop myself as an individual, to see things differently than anyone else could see. I had two individuals in high school, Mrs. Schwartz and Arnold Burgess, my advertising art teacher, and she was my English teacher, that motivated me to go to Buffalo State. And when I got to Buffalo State, of course, I was faced with something, not a shock, but something that I was familiar with. And that's basically what I experienced in high school, only I was experiencing the same things at the college level in a more intellectual way, in a more spiritual way, in a more demanding way artistically. When I got to State Teachers College, as it was called, well, not Buffalo State, now it's now called and some people joked and called it State Creatures College. We had a bus driver on Elmwood Avenue that would announce the stops all the time, and when he got to the front of the college, that's when he would announce State Creatures College. But it was a small campus, 4,000 students. Basically, everyone knew everyone else, and even some of their personal business. It was a school that, once again, taught the whole person. It was a curriculum, I should say, and it taught the whole person. Total learning experience. It was teaching life, looking at things, and becoming one with them. Now, that's a very interesting approach to a college program.
What years were you at the State Teachers College?
I was there from 1957 to 1961. And came back and did my studies for my master's degree in the late 60s and early 70s, and mm-hmm. finished in, I think, 72.
The State Teachers College was established when, do you recall?
1928, mm-hmm. when that building was built on Elmwood Avenue, or finished.
Mm-hmm.
Became a full-blown college. Going back to, you know, the total experience, the total learning. Just thinking of my art history class and the Professor Wally Green, who the first semester in art history focused on the Indian sculpture of Shiva, the creator, destroyer. And reading the Upanishads and various other literature from the Indian culture, we became, or learned, whether we learned it, felt it or not as a sophomore, one with that sculpture. We became one with Shiva. And one can say, well, why in the hell spend a whole semester on one artwork? What would you see? What would you learn? It's a waste of time. You know, you should be learning much more than that. And yet what we were learning was to open ourselves, to become one with the artwork. And that helped us become one with other artworks and other art experiences and other professors and other cultures or art techniques that we were exposed to. I found out, and I'm looking at Shiva right now across the room, I found in Shiva the universe, the cosmos, life, death, birth, the individual. I found a sense or a definition of life in that life is a constant transition from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And what Wally Green was teaching us was that art is in constant transition. A lot of people would disagree with me in that, you know, when an artwork is completed, that is a completed artwork. And I look at it very, very differently. When one completes an artwork, it's not an end, it's the beginning of the next artwork. So that is, there is a constant change and constant transition going on from one piece to the next piece to the next piece. And that's where the frustration comes in on many artists. They feel that they've reached a point that they can't go beyond that point. They get stuck. Rothko got stuck. Jackson Pollock got stuck. Marshall Gorky got stuck. And they all committed suicide because they didn't realize that they were moving into a new sense of transition, a new sense of creating art. It's a shame that we lose people like that. Many artists that reach that point destroy their artwork, and that too is a shame in terms of aesthetics and beauty that an artist does share or can share. What comes to mind is Victor Papernek. He was our industrial design teacher, and he approached the whole concept of one with the object from a utilitarian and or a non-utilitarian way because of the way things were designed. He was also an apprentice of Frank Lloyd Wright. Now, he told us a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I know I have used it myself in teaching, where Frank Lloyd Wright or one of his apprentices would take a new apprentice, put him in a room, give him a match, a wooden match with a sulfur tip, and this individual would spend 8 hours in the room contemplating the wooden match. Then the student would come out, Frank Lloyd Wright would sit in front of him, or he would sit in front of Frank Lloyd Wright, and Frank Lloyd Wright would say, "Tell me about the match. Now think about it. What can you say about a wooden match with a sulfur tip? What does it mean to you? What's the significance of it? You want me to tell you now? The match is wood. Wood comes from a tree. Tree grows in the earth. It has roots. It has leaves, branches, reaches to the sky, absorbs the heat of the sun, photosynthesis, drinks the rain. It comes from the clouds. The clouds are made of dust particles surrounded by moisture. And the process continues and goes on and on and on and on, because ultimately you're reaching out toward the sun itself and the sun is a star. And you go beyond that to other stars and you end up with the universe. I was drafted out of teaching in 1964. I was served in the Army from 64 to 66. I was trained as a ground pounder, a killer with a gun and light weapons. I was sent over to Germany and served an administrative company of the 8th Division, the Golden Shaft, as it's called. It's an 8 with a golden arrow going through it. The interesting thing about that particular division is that if there was a war to break out in Europe or anywhere else, we were shipped out first. The company that I was with, Pay and Finance, would be shipped to France, and the other parts of the company would be shipped into combat. We were the do-or-die guys, but they never told us. Besides that, the general needed an artist, and I was lucky to stay at the admin company and be retrained as a pay and finance clerk and do artwork for the general. The service club, I was fortunate enough to make friends with the guy that was leaving the service club as service club artist and got that job, making more money as a service club artist than I was in the military, being paid by Uncle Sam. While in the Army, I prepared myself for research and study of my master's and took a 30-day leave through Germany, Italy, Greece, Turkey, exploring Byzantine art. And what I was doing was designing a series of lectures on Byzantine art for the high school student. It's an area that is totally ignored, and still today, by many art historians and many art teachers. And yet, how can you disregard 1,000 years of art history, you know, and what influence it had on many people? And I have found in my experiences and the artists that I like, Kandinsky, Mark Rothko, Kazimir Malevich, Arshil Gorky, Piet Mondrian, they were all influenced by Byzantine art. And in many cases, the artists that I mentioned were influenced by Russian iconography, by the color, the stylization, the format, the composition, the structure, the design. You can find those elements in the artwork that those artists that I mentioned. And I felt that it was very important to develop that and use that as my master's project. Kenneth Weinbrenner was my instructor that oversaw the project when I came back to the United States. Coming back to the States, I was hit with the teaching at Southside Junior High School, which was a school we were opening for the first year. It was 7 through 9. It was a very interesting school to be involved in because you had nothing to begin with. Very little supplies, very little knowledge about the quality and the background of the kids. So we did it. The faculty and teachers. There were two of us that were art teachers there too. From that experience, I grew. I grew a lot in the Army because the Army built and created a sense of discipline that you wouldn't get if I had just stayed in Buffalo and continued teaching. It prepared me for what was to come, and that was Bennett High School. I was transferred to as a high school teacher and taught studio and art, mechanical drawing, architectural drafting, art history, and developed other aspects of intellectual art program for neighborhood students. It was a tough school, but a great experience. I learned a lot. Hopefully the students I taught learned a lot also, because I carried those things that I experienced at State Teachers College and even in my high school into Bennett's art program and made it much more significant and sophisticated. It became special, the art program. So special to the point that we got all the display cases in the front hall to exhibit our artwork. Fond experiences. And thanks to the Army and State Teachers College and what I learned there, I survived. I became another survivor because we had riots in 1968, and then educationally, a lot of things became very, 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 very difficult.
Did the riots happen at the school?
Outside from UB, and then they broke into the school, and they broke into the school and created some problems, breaking classroom doors and windows and so on. It was a scary time, a time of change. Change on my part because I became a greater disciplinarian. And that, again, I thank the Army and the other experiences I had in the junior high school. Then came City Honors, mm-hmm. 20 years at City Honors, where I'm dealing with students that were visually blind, were visually illiterate, and I had to change their point of view in seeing art, change my point of view in teaching art. And I approached many of the things that I did from a verbal standpoint so that I built verbal understanding in the students, and then the students could take that and apply it visually. The program was so successful that I presented it to the New York State Art Teachers Association Conference Convention, and also to the Humanities Conference the state held. I don't even know if they're having those conferences now, today. It was very important, and I became much more mysterious in my approaches to teaching, or mystical, or spiritual. You know, like when I was teaching photography at City Honors, I'd give an assignment, photograph the edge of an edge, or I want a photograph of silence. And I would do this with also the drawing and painting class and sometimes the studio and art classes, really challenging the student to think differently, to see differently. And the funny thing is, it all relates back to my high school experiences and my college experiences, because I was imparting all of that sensitivity, the experiences of beauty, the experiences of an aesthetic experience, as well as the basic elements and principles of art, which I thought were very, very important. But, you know, in teaching at Bennett and teaching at City Honors, I was also teaching in other situations in the community. For 5 years, I taught at the Albright Art School during its winter and summer program. Taught at Villa Maria College Photography there for 5 years. I was at Buff State for almost, I think, 5 years. There was a time when Stan Searles was sick, and I took over his graduate classes, which I was very honored. I felt very honored to do that. And I was teaching his class on how a child develops and the art experiences a child has by the time they're 5 years old. And I don't know if most people know it, but a child should experience the elements and principles of design by the time they're 5 years old, and even earlier. And the wonderful thing about that particular class was we'd have mothers bring their kids in, and we'd work with the children in class, drawing, talking, you know. We'd even play as children. I would have the students in the class get down to the level of the child. If the child's crawling, you crawl and look at the world around you. If the child's standing, how high is the child's eye level? And look at the world that way. And relate that to how they execute art, and how they see art, and how they see people. It was fun. I had a good relationship with Stan Searles, and that goes back to what I said earlier, sharing that knowledge and experience in life with the faculty, who became friends, as I said. Before I forget, I just want to make some statement describing my, what one would say, describing my artwork. Sometimes I write these things in descriptions to be funny, or maybe a little sarcastic. My work has nothing to do with art. It's uncanny accuracy. It's supremely real. It's accurate photorealism. It's pinhole. It's light. It's elements of stylization. Detail in both the animate and inanimate. Richly tactile, opulent, the suppression of time and motion, and basic visual delight of movement and mass, the dynamics of motion. So I'll think upon that one, folks. Birchfield. We talked about Birchfield the last interview. Why am I at the Birchfield, or why did I come to the Birchfield? One of the things I used to serve, or do still serve, is to meet the needs of the artists in the community. Be the kind of a go-between the artist and the Birchfield Center itself, to help energize the mind of the artist and the staff of the Birchfield. Hopefully open the hearts of the people that I work with or have worked with in the past, and have people that have moved on to other positions. I love working with Spain and Rodriguez and Olmsted and Rogoven and Adele Cohen. Well, not Adele Cohen, but Ben Perrone on the Adele Cohen exhibition with Guber and Stena. I became very close with Stena during her installation and exhibition. She called me the paparazzi because I was always taking pictures of her. And then we got, because we were the same age, we really got into talking about life and artistic pursuits and what she had done previously in Buffalo.
Can you talk a little bit about the Spain exhibition that you worked on with Don Metz and Ed Cardoni?
Oh, that was it was a wonderful experience, but it was hell too, in terms of getting works or getting information or getting statements and getting the right images. And the three of us, Don and myself, a lot of the time just taking the works and laying them out in the boardroom, and sometimes just taking over the whole gallery space if necessary to see the work and plot and plan. And I was doing a lot of research on artists that were related to Spain Rodriguez or to that period of time that Spain was very popular back in the Buffalo, early Buffalo days, and also the when he moved to San Francisco, I think it was. At one point, research I was doing to try to get artists of that period here to Buffalo, but that was passed on to somebody else on the staff, and that was never developed, which was a shame. Through all the artists that I mentioned and the exhibitions that I curated and co-curated, I always became a documenter, and I photographed the artists as much as I possibly could. Again, that was meeting the needs of the Birchfield Penny Art Center because nobody else was documenting. In the 13 years that I'd been at the Birchfield, I'd been documenting main exhibitions in the gallery space and also small gallery shows, documenting educational experiences, dealing with tours, documenting some of those tours because of the important people that we were dealing with since we moved into the new building. One thing I didn't mention comes to mind. I also documented the complete building of that building from when it was a flat piece of ground to the finished building that you see today in the opening of the building. One of my pet projects that I'm working on and have been working on for a few years is writing about Milton Rogoven, because I became very close to Milton Rogoven and photographing him and working with him. In fact, I was on his last photo shoot for him to complete a quartet image. And that in itself was an experience. And what I'm concerned about in terms of researching, not really researching, because there's not much you can find about Milton Rogoven's aesthetic. He never talked about it. He never wrote about it. Nobody else has really become involved in that concept. What is his experience of aesthetics in his execution of his artwork? Did he have a sense of aesthetic? And that's something I want to explore and develop. And a lot of the other experiences I've had at the Birchfield with artists like Wes Olmsted in his major exhibition, the Adele Cohen exhibition, the three exhibitions I've worked on in relation to Milton Rogoven's work, and many other things that I've experienced there. Again, meeting the needs of the gallery, meeting the needs of the staff, meeting the needs of the artists that I've become familiar with and become one with the artist community in Buffalo.